welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch with me, Jisoo Kee. Hope you're hanging in there. Stocks falling for the sixth day in a row. We just heard all the info from the Big O, and we'll be checking in with him throughout the show, along with Steve Bertrand. We'll have an update on the market shortly. Let's get started, though, with our weekly check-in on tech and innovation news. And here for you now is Dan Ackerman. He is the Senior Managing Editor at CNET. Hi, Dan.
Hey there.
Great to have you on the show. I know a lot of people are looking for new laptops, and of course, a lot of folks love MacBooks. You've got a special deal on one?
You know, for years, the MacBook Air was like that classic laptop that everybody bought, whether you're in college or at work, because it was $999, and that was great. When they redid it a couple of years ago, they raised the price to $1099, $1199. It wasn't that instinctual buy anymore. So I was very pleased to see that the latest version of the MacBook Air, that classic 13-inch laptop, it's at Amazon, it's at B&H, it's at Best Buy, a few other places, now down to $950, which is about $150 off the entry price if you go to Apple's website or an Apple store to get it. So ironically, it's probably better to get one of these somewhere else, not from Apple directly.
So, Dan, I'm working off of a MacBook Air right now, and I was a little bit nervous about getting one because it is so thin and it is so light, and I was worried about the longevity and whether it could last, but it seems to be doing a really good job for me.
Yeah, they're made out of a single piece of machined aluminum. These things are really like tanks, both the older MacBook Airs and even the newer model. The one complaint people have had about the newer models of all MacBooks is the super flat keyboard. And if you have one of the newer ones, you can tell the keys are really shallow. And they've gone through a couple of iterations to make that a little bit better. It's still not everybody's favorite, but I think you make up for that with how thin and light and just universally useful it is.
Seems as though Apple is keeping the budget-minded consumer in mind. We've been hearing a lot about this budget-friendly iPhone that's supposedly coming out. Of course, we know that it's now delayed because of coronavirus production delays. But is this a change in Apple's philosophy?
No, they always go for more of the high end of the market, especially on computer stuff. And you'll see that these lower prices are coming from third-party stores, whether it's Amazon or Best Buy or someone else. They very rarely drop the price on something. They'll usually make it year over year a little bit better or add new features and keep the price the same, except for occasionally those lower-priced phones, and frankly, $500 is still pretty expensive for
it
a phone. you know, they like to stay in the higher end of the market.
Something else that's really cool that's just making the news is that the Smithsonian has unleashed nearly 3 million images into the public domain. What is this going to mean?
Well, they're taking a lot of the images that they have, whether it's scans of existing artwork, whether it's 3D models of things, and they're making them available under a type of Creative Commons license, which basically means you can take these images and use them on your own website, in your art, in commercial products that you're making without getting any special permission or even attribution. And they're taking a lot of the archive and they're transitioning it into this model, which I think is very interesting because a lot of these things are very old pieces of art that are in the public domain technically anyway, but you may not have a way to get a cool image of it to use. So I think it's very forward-thinking of them to make all this available to people.
And I'm hearing some of these are 3D images as well.
Yeah, some of them are scans of real-world objects rather than paintings or drawings or things like that. And I know even in the last couple of days, I've seen online people who are artists and game designers and other creative people being very interested in going through this catalog and finding some imagery or iconography that they can use in their product. And that's a cool way of taking things that are, frankly, you know, things in a museum and recontextualizing them and making them new and interesting again.
Oh, that is fantastic. And you have some news about Razer and the Galaxy Z flip phone. We've been so excited about hearing about these foldable glass screens on these phones.
Yeah, you know, these folding phones started out last year. Samsung had one called the Galaxy Fold, and it had some problems early on. It was very expensive, so it didn't really take off. The official release got delayed for a few months while I ironed out some problems. Now we're into the second generation of these, and the classic Razer brand, that old flip phone, is back with something that kind of looks and feels like the old Razer, but it's really a flexible screen that forms a large smartphone, and Samsung has one called the Z Flip that's basically a big, you know, big phone size, and you just fold it in half horizontally. horizontally, so it becomes much more pocket-sized. And I appreciate that they're moving forward with the designs and trying new things, and the second generation is better than the first generation. But for everyone who's sitting around going, oh, is this where they become mainstream? We're not there yet. I think there's still a lot of questions about the longevity, the long-term durableness of these devices, because frankly, when you add moving parts like hinges and flexible mm-hmm. screens and the little edges of them that dust can get into and things like that, the more parts you add to something, especially parts that move, the easier it is for something to break down, especially these very high prices. They're asking you and I to basically be paid beta testers
we're
for these things.
Yes,
we're paying to be the guinea pigs. And it's a cool idea. Come back in 3 or 4 years, and maybe everything will have a folding screen. It'll be awesome. I don't think we're there yet, even with the second generation of phones.
So still a ways to go. Thanks so much to Dan Ackerman. He's a senior managing editor at CNET.com. G here with the Wintrust Business Lunch, and in the studio now, Bill Geiger of Geiger Wealth Management. Hi, Bill. Thank you for being here.
It's my pleasure.
A lot of fear about the coronavirus epidemic and how it's affecting our listeners' 401ks and their investments. We've been hearing from them all week on all of the shows. I know a lot of people are losing sleep, but who really needs to be worried?
Well, gee, if you're in your late 50s or early 60s, you're getting close to retirement, which is the category of folks that we work with primarily. Those are the folks that should really, really, really be concerned about this downturn. If you have a big loss at this stage of your life, you are going to lead the rest of your life differently. Not as well, period. And there's no qualification there. You have a big loss at this stage, the rest of your life is going to be smaller.
Not as much time to recover from that huge loss. That makes total sense.
Well, you'll never have as much as what you might have had.
Mm-hmm. So you're talking about couples in their late 50s to early 60s. Now, what should these folks at this stage of their life be doing right now to protect their retirements?
Gee, they should be taking action. You cannot just sit back and ride this out. Again, you have a big loss at this stage. You just can't afford it. If you have a big loss at this stage of your life, you'll lead a different life. You'll lead a smaller retirement for the rest of your life. Folks need to be smart at this stage. They need to protect their portfolio. They need to protect their family. They need to protect their retirement and protect their legacy. And if it sounds like I'm being passionate about this, it's because I am.
And I think your passion is well-founded because, like I said, we have been hearing from listeners all week concerned about their portfolios. And are they right to be that worried? Just how concerned should everybody be?
They should be very concerned, G. Right now, this week, we've had the worst week in the market since 2008. We've already been down 10% from the high this year. We're in correction territory. And, gee, it's like watching a car wreck in slow motion. We know what's coming. There's no doubt about that. We know what's coming. It's just going to get worse. Global economies are going to get worse, and it's going to affect our economy, and it's going to affect our stock market.
So, Bill, you've been doing this a long time. How can you help our listeners today?
Folks, this is going to be a blatant commercial. We can protect your portfolio from big losses without you getting out of the market. Basically, what we do is we put a safety net underneath our clients' portfolios. That way, they can stay fully invested, they can stay in the market in case this market snaps back, but if it doesn't, you're protected from large losses. This is what we call our safety net strategy. We do it all the time with our clients that are in this age category, late 50s, early 60s, but particularly now, you need to take action.
Can you describe what happens in the process of building that roadmap? You've talked about a roadmap that you help build for your clients.
Well, we help them put together a plan for the retirement. Most folks, by the time they're late 50s, early 60s, their portfolio still looks like a 30 or 40-year-old's. And that's been easy to do in this bull market, 11-year bull market. But gee, it's really, really, really time to take a second look at that and make sure that you have a handle on the risk that you have. You need a safety net. You need a protection. And you think about this. If the market keeps going up and you have a safety net underneath your portfolio, we just move the safety net up. You can still participate. But if the market continues to go down, you've protected your portfolio and your retirement from really, really big losses. Gee, I know, you know, when we're on with you, typically we're talking about a complementary financial plan, and we're going to offer that today. As a matter of fact, the first five callers who call in with at least $500,000 saved up for their retirement, we're going to sit down with them personally and help them put together a full-blown plan. But folks, even if you're not sure whether you're ready for a full-blown retirement plan at this time, if you want to talk about this safety net strategy, when you call in, just tell the person that's setting your appointment, I want to talk about the safety net strategy. We'll get you in as soon as possible and sit down with as many people as what we can.
Speaking with Bill Geiger of Geiger Wealth Management, he's telling us about this unique safety net.
Right.
It sounds like a win-win situation because you're saying once you analyze the portfolio, you set this safety net in place, you're not even losing out on any of the gains that you might be getting as well.
No, you can still participate in the market if it continues to go up. If it snaps back, remember the first quarter of 2019 after we had that big downturn in the fourth quarter of 2018, the market snapped back. Well, if the market snaps back and you've got the safety net there, you're still going to participate. You're still going to make good money. But if we don't snap back, if it continues to go down, you're going to protect yourself from having a big loss. And you really don't want a big loss at this stage of your life. It's going to change your retirement, as we said before.
So, Bill, you have a wealth of experience. You have lived through corrections before and recessions. What are you telling your clients right now? I'm sure you're hearing from them a lot.
Well, most of them have this strategy that I'm talking to you about.
So they're sleeping soundly at night.
You know, I can't believe how few phone calls we've had. A couple of them call up and they say, is this really working? We tell them, yes, it is. And they're just fine. You know what I'm thinking about? You're going to give the phone number out in just a moment.
Yes, I sure am.
For the complimentary financial plan. Folks, I would strongly, strongly encourage you to use this as kind of a wake-up call. I mean, we tend to put things off. You know, the market goes up, mm-hmm. It snaps back. We figure out it's just a buying opportunity. I've been doing this for 35 years. I've watched the market go down over 20% in one day. And I can tell you I'm as concerned right now as I've ever been in the 35 years that I've been doing this, that I've been helping people prepare for retirement. So, gee, when you give this number, we're going to help the first five people who call in with a complimentary full-blown financial plan if they have a $500,000 portfolio or larger. But, folks, if you want to know about the safety net strategy, if you want to sit down and see if you can use it in your portfolio, give the same phone number a call. Just let the person setting the appointment know that that's what you'd like to do.
Bill, I can tell that you are fired up because I think you are saying that people should be concerned.
This is a wake-up call.
Well, thank you so much to Bill Geiger of Geiger Wealth Management.
Thank you.
And here's the special offer that you were just talking about.
Go ahead.
Are you confident that you're doing everything that you can be doing? Now, everything that you should be doing to prepare for retirement. Bill and his team at Geiger Wealth can help make sure you're on the right track to retire comfortably. Now, they have a special opportunity for you today. They're going to sit down with you personally to create a full-blown plan for your retirement. Now, this is up to a $3,000 value. Complimentary for the first five callers who have at least $500,000 saved for retirement. Now call 800-681-2498. That's 800-681-2498. Now listen, at this stage of your life, your portfolio is probably bigger than it's ever been. And you need to have a plan in place to protect it, to have the income you're going to need, to reduce your taxes, and to be able to sleep at night. Bill and his team are going to translate the complex financial planning process into easy-to-understand steps with a personalized, full-blown retirement plan designed to help you retire safely and comfortably. Call right now for your complimentary, personalized, full-blown retirement plan, 800-681-2498. That's 800-681-2498. Thank you so much, Bill, for being in studio with us.
My pleasure.
Wintrust Business Lunch with me, G. Do I have you thinking about that gift card that somebody gave you this past holiday season, or maybe one that you have had for a couple of years? Here to talk all about it is Bankrate.com's analyst, Ted Rossman. Hi, Ted.
Hi there.
So great to have you on the show. So how many adults, this number is huge. You said 20 billion, more than 20 billion in unused gift cards.
Yes, it is definitely a widespread issue. We found that half of U.S. adults are currently sitting on unused gift cards. And per person, the average is $167. This is real money that a lot of us have lying around, and we really need to put it to use.
Now, there are some restrictions around some gift cards, right?
Less these days. Most gift card expiration policies have improved a lot in recent years. In fact, the majority of gift cards don't expire at all. Some, especially those with the Visa, MasterCard, and American Express logos, those can expire in 5 years. But even there, if you have an expired Amex card and you notify the company, they'll give you your money back. Some of these cards charge inactivity fees if you don't use them for more than a year. Those also have become less common. The main obstacle here is just ourselves. We forget about these cards, or maybe it's for a store that we don't tend to go to a lot. It's really on us to go ahead and use them.
So, Ted, you're saying that we are our own worst enemies.
We are. I'm guilty of this, too. I have to say, when we started this project and I saw this $167 average, I thought, there's no way I have that much. And I actually looked around at home, and truth be told, I have even more than that. So I've got to put them to use. I actually already started. My family and I went out to dinner last week and used one of our gift cards. But, yeah, that's the thing. I mean, we get these for Christmas, and we put them in a drawer or a box, or we forget about them. Or maybe it's one of those weird remainder amounts. Like, I know one of my gift cards is something I returned, and I got this kind of odd fraction on a gift card, and I really need to remember to use it, either for myself, or I could buy a present for a friend or a family member. If worse comes to worse, people can sell these gift cards on a site like cardpool.com. You get about 70 to 80% of what it's worth. Maybe consider giving them to charity, too. Do something. Just don't let them gather dust.
Talking with Ted Rossman, he's a Bankrate.com's analyst, and we're talking about how U.S. adults have more than $20 billion in unused gift cards or other credits. Let's talk about where you can sell your gift card if you're not going to use it. You mentioned cardpool.com. There's also cardcash.com, and there's also giftcardspread.com. But you say that people still need to use some caution when they're looking to sell their gift cards online.
I've sold some gift cards myself, and I had one bad experience with a company that's actually not around anymore, but I think the example still holds. I sold this gift card, they sent me a check, and the check bounced. And then I was upset because I'd given up my gift card, my bank was charging me a fee, and I really had nothing to show for it.
Did they know who they were dealing with here?
To the company's credit, they did make good on it, and they sent me another check that worked, and they even included the bank fee. I've seen a lot of similar complaints out there on sites like the Better Business Bureau. Some people complain that they didn't get the amount they were promised or it didn't come in a timely fashion. To be fair, a lot of people have good experiences, too. I would say tread carefully. Maybe sell one or two as a test. Don't sell 10 cards all at once. And just see how it goes. Remember also that even in a best-case scenario, you'll get about 70 to 80% of what the card is worth. So it's something, but it's not as lucrative as using it yourself or buying something as a gift.
So you are recommending sort of re-gifting the gift card. You may not want to just give the gift card to someone as a gift, but use it to buy a present for someone for their birthday or a holiday.
That's the best way to ensure that you're getting maximum value and also that you don't have any weird hiccups, because just like my example with resale sites, if you give somebody a gift card and they have some problem with it, then that's an awkward exchange. There's also the fact that a lot of our unused gift cards are strange remainder amounts. Like, I think I have a Macy's card for $32.27, and you know, there might be a weird etiquette to being like, hey, Mom, happy birthday, here's a weird amount. but what you can do is either buy something with it, or a lot of companies let you add value to gift cards. So I could actually top up that $32 and change and maybe give my mom a $50 gift card, which is more of a neat round number. So that's another discounted gift idea.
I never thought about doing that. That's a good idea. What if you have $2.50 left on a gift card? What do you do with that?
A lot of times when you have a very small amount, typically under $5, a lot of times the merchant will let you cash it out. So either at the point of sale, or maybe if you bought something online, you can actually go into a store and say, hey, could you cash out this last little bit? Merchants love gift cards because they love the fact that either we don't use it and they make money that way, or we maybe use too much and then we get into the store and we buy extra. From a legal standpoint, though, these are liabilities on their books. Starbucks has almost $2 billion of unused gift cards. So they want you to use it. They also want you to top it up and come back. But another reason to use cards promptly is, what if the store goes out of business? Then you could be out of luck.
When that's happened to a lot of folks with Sears.
Yep, Toys R Us, Borders, those are other examples. Borders customers lost about $18 million.
Wow.
Yeah, there's a lot of these, and I think it's just another good reason to use it sooner, not later. It's not going to get more valuable over time.
So, Ted, explain that to me. So it's not as though the company gets revenue when they sell the gift card. It's a liability on their books, you said.
They do have to list it as an outstanding liability. Starbucks is smart because they've really created this feedback loop where they encourage people to load gift cards into their app, and then they're really smart about the app and getting you into their stores and mobile ordering and all that stuff. And what they want you to do is drain it down and then reload it. They actually save on the credit card processing because they process this one-time payment, and then it's like their own currency for future transactions. You're just transacting on store credit rather than swiping your credit card every time you go in. Those are the companies that I think are doing it the best, the ones that it's really mobile and flexible. It's a good last-minute gift idea, too, if you're in a pinch and you want to buy somebody an electronic gift card. Stores like Starbucks make it easy.
So, Ted, you said a lot less restrictions now. Of course, the Credit Card Accountability, Responsibility, and Disclosure Act passed in 2009. So maybe you don't have to worry about those sort of things, but you still do have to worry about the inactivity fee. So you should just check the small print on the back of your gift card?
I agree. The inactivity fee can really eat into the value because a lot of times that's $5 a month, let's say, after a full year of non-use, and that could pretty quickly eat away at your value. So I think everybody should look around, look in your desk drawer, figure out if you have unused gift cards, and come up with a plan to get that value.
Love it. Thank you so much for reminding us, Ted, to look for those gift cards and just stop being lazy and use them. I don't know why we're not using them. Gift cards burn a hole in my pocket, so I use them right away. So this is not a problem for me. Thanks so much to Bankrate.com's analyst, Ted Rossman, for being with us. Look forward to talking with you again soon.
Me too. Thanks for having me.
Winter's Business Lunch with me, G, and in the studio now is WGN Radio's very own Amy Guth. This is the point in the show where we talk about some trending business news, and
every day I feel like we inch closer and closer to just straight up making this a food segment.
I know, and I do have some food updates, but I will first start with Apple because we were talking about Apple at the top of the show. Did you know that Apple won't let bad guys use iPhones in movies?
They are very particular about brand perception, and so nothing about that surprises me at all.
I just rented on demand at home the movie Knives Out. Have you seen it yet?
Not yet, but I want to.
Okay, it's a fabulous movie. I'm not going to give anything away. It is a mystery, a murder mystery movie, and the director from that movie is the one that let this cat out of the bag about Apple and their requirements and restrictions. So, just FYI, just see who has the iPhone.
So now I'm going to look at. Oh, look at the that guy has an Android. Therefore, he must be the villain.
There you go. A little bit of trivia there for you.
It's going to be like a spoiler, because then if you see somebody in a preview using a non Apple, you're like, that's the killer right there. I already knew it. That's how I knew it.
I know earlier in the week we were talking about Peapod. You were reporting on Peapod and who is going to get the over, I think it was like 50,000 or 60,000 customers.
It's about 10,000 a week, different customers, but it's a total base of about 50,000 people that are kind of up for grabs. So a lot of different grocery chains were looking at that. Mm-hmm. Amazon being the Whole Foods owner, they're of course a big runner, big contender for that.
So as soon as next month, Walmart plans to start publicly testing a membership program called Walmart Plus. It's like a plus symbol, so I'm guessing that's Walmart Plus. I think this is going to be something that they launch to compete with Amazon Prime. So they have been quietly working on this for some time. And basically, this program is expected to launch as a rebrand of Walmart's existing Delivery Unlimited service, which charges customers $98 a year for unlimited same-day delivery of fresh groceries from one of its 1,600-plus Walmart stores in the U.S., where the program is available. And you can even use text messaging to place orders. So, of course, Walmart has really been pummeled by Amazon Prime since Prime launched in 2005.
Amazon and Walmart are just not playing with each other.
Right,
they're in it to win it.
Right. And, Walmart is coming back.
Yeah.
So.
And, an interesting kind of side story to that I've been watching with a lot of interest is the commercial real estate piece of that. So it used to be that, you would order your stuff and in a couple of days it would show up at your door. Now that you have memberships, now that even Prime next day is a little competitive, like I want that the same day thing.
I want it in 1 hour.
Right. So, and that's everything from, televisions to toilet paper. People want their stuff right then. So more and more what we're seeing.
Toilet paper is really important.
That is, when you need toilet paper, you need toilet paper 5 minutes ago. That's true. We're seeing a lot of commercial warehouse space just outside of the city getting snapped up. Very, very big deals. Lowe's actually just today there's a story about how Lowe's is taking over what was formerly a huge Sears warehouse in Manteno. More and more we're seeing this. We see this with Target. We see that, all these giants kind of snapping up the land because it's no longer like, okay, good enough, we'll get it to a close city and then distribute. No, people here in the city and nearby suburbs, like if you order it, you need it same day. So more and more, we're going to start seeing big, big warehouse spaces being taken over to accommodate the new expectations of e-commerce.
Well, think about Amazon. Think about Walmart. Just how much of a big part of our lives, our everyday lives, these companies are.
My neighbor literally orders Amazon every day, every single day. And she lives on the floor below me. So every day I walk in, I take her Amazon box and I leave it at her door on my way up to my door. And I'm like, literally every day.
Speaking of Amazon, have you heard about Amazon Go Grocery? Imagine walking in, picking out what you want, and then just strolling out. No waiting in a cashier's line, no paying. The cameras basically just record everything that you did, and then you'll get a bill when you get home.
There is such an Amazon store. Like the
this is a big pause that I just experienced from you.
There is such an Amazon store here in this building, and when it opened, I went down there. I was like, that's so interesting. I'm going to go check this out. Immediately walking in the door, I was like, this could go wrong in so many different ways. I feel like everybody will be under suspicion of shoplifting until proven otherwise. So I was like, I can't do this. So I've never shopped at that thing because I'm just like, I'm not feeling it. So I don't know. I think it's really interesting. Of course, it's another way that we are seeing a potential, loss of jobs there on the horizon.
Especially
there.
If you're a supermarket employee.
That's what I'm saying. So, so there's that. But I think it's interesting. All of it is interesting to me. There's always kind of unintended consequences with any sort of type of technology, but nonetheless.
And finally, I promised you your food story.
I was going to say, you haven't given me any fast food news yet today,
Chipotle,
G. What you got?
Also a big part of many of your lives is upgrading its queso again. So it's going to be a little less
breaking
gritty.
Queso news.
I'm just letting you know.
Oh, wait, I've got some fast food news for
cheese
you.
Cheese is very important to me.
It's important. Panera is now offering a coffee subscription. They're going to pilot that. What's interesting, it's any time of day. It is any cup sizes. It's $8.99 a month.
That would save me so much money if only there were a Panera in this building.
Well, that's the thing. So if you price out coffee, you spend at minimum $2 a day, And if you do that every day, $8.99 a month is a pretty good deal for coffee. So they're going to pilot that. We shall see how that goes. Why are you rubbing your head like that's like it's bothering you?
I have such a bad confession to make right now because I spend way more than $2 a cup on coffee.
I'm a like black coffee plain person. No, I don't. There are people that I know.
I'm a latte person with oat milk. I'm one of those frou-frou people. I'm sorry. I hate to admit it, but it's true. And I really shouldn't be spending money on coffee. I should be paying off debts. Student loan debt. Anyway, okay, I've made my confession. Jasmine, can you just... I will subscribe to this. You live near a Panera. Maybe you can bring the coffee in since you're next door to a Panera.
Okay, it'd be like an hour wait for
okay,
that.
It would be
so. Also, Jasmine does so much.
I know, I'm just
Let's
teasing.
Not add to her.
I would never do that. I appreciate Jasmine so much, our executive producer of the Wintrust Business Lunch, getting a shout out today. So thank you for all you do. And WGN Radio's Amy Guth, thank you for all you do.
Oh, thanks.
Okay, the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.